Davis Van Optorp here with Matt Ford and Jonathan Harning. Bayern Munich have a big week in the Champions League coming up, and that is after a narrow 3-2 victory over Augsburg. We also discuss the slim chances that Schalke have to beat Manchester City. But to start this week, Matt Ford was in Frankfurt where he caught a game against Gladbach. He talked to some fans before the game about their season and their chances in the Europa League. So let's start the week in Frankfurt. All right, so Matt was in the stadium this week. He talked to some fans before the big game between Eintracht Frankfurt and Gladbach. It was rather warm that day, wasn't it, in Frankfurt?
Yeah, it's a bit of a heat wave for February at the moment, I think. No, seriously, pre-game you could walk around in a t-shirt, 16 degrees, 17 degrees.
Surprised you didn't have your shorts on,
mate. Well, you know, we have to behave ourselves on these days out. Temperature dropped later on, but no, really, great day out. Frankfurt, it's always a good city to visit. Very easy to get to. Stadium's very easy to get to. So if anyone's fancying a trip over to Germany, I'd always recommend Eintracht Frankfurt. It's always a good day out, and turned out to be a decent game as well. I've seen worse 1-1s.
So they have a great fan scene as well, and you caught up with one of the fans before the game. You warned me as well, after sending me this recording, that there is some profanity in the recording. So if that is not your thing, you can skip ahead to the next section.
Yeah, thanks again to Basti. He does a couple of good podcasts over here in Germany as well, so it's always good to catch up with him and his mates. And they'd been in the Ukraine during the week for Frankfurt's away game, and of course, I wrote in a piece afterwards that European campaign that Frankfurt are on is it's colouring their entire season, and in a positive sense. I think so many, we've spoken so often about how Bundesliga teams struggle because they simply don't have the squad depth. There's so many examples of it. But Frankfurt, whether it's the club, whether it's the fans, whether it's the players, whether it's Adi Hütter, whether it's the city itself, everyone is absolutely reveling in this European journey, and it could go further. They came back from Ukraine with a 2-2 draw. It was a bit of a double-sided sword because Shakhtar Donetsk, on the one hand, that's a Champions League team in many ways, and getting a 2-2 draw is not bad at all. But they did play against 10 men for 80 minutes, so some of them were saying we probably could have got more out of that. But there's absolutely no reason why they can't go a step further on Thursday.
So, anyways, here is this conversation with Basti.
Sunday afternoon, and I'm in sunny, relatively warm Frankfurt, at least for the middle of February. So Eintracht Frankfurt versus Borussia Mönchengladbach, two of the more high-flying teams in the Bundesliga this season. I think both teams have surprised quite a lot of people, but Eintracht Frankfurt in particular, we've seen a lot of Bundesliga teams struggling to balance Europe and domestic football in recent years, but that's been no problem for Frankfurt. They obviously flew through their Europa League group with 6 wins in 6, and they've also managed to get a 2-2 draw away at Shakhtar Donetsk just a few days ago. Basti, you were one of the Frankfurt fans, one of the 3,000 Frankfurt fans who were in Donetsk just 2 days ago. First of all, tell us a little bit about your trip to the Ukraine. Are you still freezing cold, or have you thawed out?
No, it wasn't that cold as expected. So it's kind of like the same here, only if the wind goes blue to your face and it's kind of cold on the whole body. But it wasn't that bad. So we're kind of fresh, I would say.
Tell us about your trip. How did you get there?
I went there on Wednesday and I left on Friday, so it was like a trip on a. In Germany, it's lastminute.com. It's like a regular trip, so it was kind of cheaper than the fans did with the day flight. So it was kind of cool.
Did you go direct to Kharkiv?
I went over Warsaw, but it was a fly where you get booked right through. So okay. Kind of was one
so
direction.
A flight from Frankfurt to Warsaw, and then changed Warsaw down to Kharkiv.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, the game was in Kharkiv because Shakhtar Donetsk have moved away from their current stadium because of the current conflict in the Ukraine. So yeah, tell us what was it like when you arrived in Kharkiv then? What was the city like? What were the people like? What was the game like?
The city was kind of cool. The people were kind of friendly. It was far better than Rome, I have to say. Okay. Not as I expected. Because in Rome, they think it's a European city, there's no trouble, but it was kind of the opposite. Kharkiv was more like I expected to be in Rome, you know? It's like even the police were friendly, so there was no trouble at all. It was kind of a cheap alcohol.
Always important.
Good looking girls. Good looking girls. And it was kind of easy. It was the distance from our hotel to the stadium wasn't far, so there was. Nothing I would say which pissed me off, so it's kind of perfect, because in Rome it was, as I said, the opposite. because it was kind of a, when you get in the stadium in Rome, at that time we completely lost focus, and we lost the power to support, because the police fucked you up. It was kind of rainy. They left you stand outside the stadium for 3 hours. Nothing from that, even if it was a little bit more cold, went down there. So it was a perfect trip. The mood was good between the fans from Frankfurt, between the fans to the opposite, because they were...
How many fans of Shakhtar Donetsk were there? Because I mean, Kharkiv isn't that close to Donetsk. It's quite a long way away.
I'd guess 4,000, okay. And then was 15,000 in general, and were kind of neutral spectators, I would say. Yeah. So it was kind of, you can compare it to Cyprus. Okay. It was the same. It wasn't their stadium. It was an away game for them too. So it was kind of bizarre. But for us, it was good because it was like a home game.
I heard a rumor before. Is it true that you missed both of Frankfurt's goals?
No, it wasn't me. Then you talk to the other guy. It's called Chris. Kind of regards.
Chris missed both of the goals.
Yeah, when he was going to the toilet by one goal and grabbing some beer off the other goal. So I saw both goals.
So you're the perfect person to ask. Was that a good performance from Frankfurt? Are you happy with the 2-2 draw away at Donetsk?
That's kind of a tough question. The thing is, if you had asked me before the game, I would say, oh, fucking yeah. But due to the what's in German we say Verlauf, due to the circumstances at that day, maybe we should have grabbed a win there. You don't know. It won't be easier.
Donetsk had 10 men for about 18 minutes,
and you had some very very close opportunities. Mm. And as you said, like it was 10 minutes of 18 minutes against 10. But you have to say, I'm not that pessimistic, because Shakhtar Donetsk, it's kind of a tough squad. They had Tyson and Marlos. They were kind of extraordinary players. And it was kind of the toughest team I saw this season, even better than Bayern and Dortmund. So you have two away goals. Yeah. And you have everything in your own hand at the home game. So
the return leg's on Thursday, isn't it? Are you confident?
I don't know. I'm fucking nervous. I'm fucking nervous because I really want to have another trip like that with my guys, with my people, with the whole fans and for Eintracht, and it would be so fucking cool, because we have to say Kharkiv, even if it was kind of cool, it wasn't a dream destination, you know? It's like there's more to come. It's like Sevilla, Lisbon.
Okay. I think it's interesting that that's the balance that Frankfurt have to get this season. Obviously, like Basti was saying, the fans have been and enjoying these European trips so much. I mean, we've seen some of the choreographies and some of the displays and the sheer numbers of Eintracht Frankfurt fans that have been travelling. They've really, really taken the Europa League to heart. But, Julian, you were saying before that perhaps there are actually, on the pitch at least, more important things for Frankfurt to think about. So how can Frankfurt get that balance between, we want to go further and enjoy further trips in the Europa League, but We want to also qualify for the competition again next year. How can they get that balance?
Yeah, that's kind of a tough question. And actually, that's right now we're in the middle of the decisive weeks right now. And that's really, I mean, ask me in two weeks again. We're now heading against Borussia Mönchengladbach. They are still 9 points far from us. And then there's, of course, the league game after against Donetsk. So it's critical, and we don't know. I mean, it is as you said. On the one side, we want to qualify for the next rounds. On the other side, we still want to keep be in the first third of the league of the table. As I said before, the club actually did some good transfers. They bought, well, they on loan it was Rode, so defense midfielder.
Rode on loan from Dortmund.
Exactly,
exactly.
And then they got a center back, which is Martin Hinteregger. Yeah. Very good, two very good players. And actually, they are right now. I think they both played every game so far. Mm. They could have, and that's actually, I mean, that's a good sign also from the management that they are. That they know the circumstances and they know, okay, that's what's in front of us, and we still want to fight for that.
The last time that we met up and had a chat was at the away game in Stuttgart, I think, which Frankfurt won 3-0. After that game, I asked Adi Hütter in the press conference, why is it that Frankfurt have been able to balance both competitions? in the past, so many Bundesliga clubs, whether it was Schalke, Leverkusen, Gladbach sometimes, Cologne especially, whenever they get into Europe, they tend to lose that balance completely and they really suffer domestically. That's not happened to Frankfurt. You're still sixth going into today's game. Yeah, so for you, what have Frankfurt done right to get that balance correct? Because the squad's not that big, is it?
No, it's actually three reasons. It's the squad, as you said. It's secondly, the coach. And third, and that's probably the main reason, it's the supporters. It's the fans. It's actually the crowd, the whole city, the management, which includes then also the rest of the club. They want these trips. They want this experience. And they are so hungry for that. I think last time was in 2015, which is already way, 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 way too low, and so they're really, hungry for that experience. And also, as I said, the squad is a very young team. They're hungry. No one actually achieved a lot so far in his career. Our best player, Kevin Prince Boateng, now playing for Barcelona. He left this summer. They're not that many national players. I mean, Ante Rebic is probably so far. He's our
most well-known player.
Exactly. That's Evelyn. Yeah. Exactly. He played the World Cup final. And then thirdly, it's Adi Hütter, our coach, who has trained clubs like Basel, like Salzburg, and he knows that. You say in Germany there's a specific word for that. It's called Doppelbelastung, yeah. Which is kind of the experience to play in both on two competitions.
Doppelbelastung, I think literally translated a double burden. The idea of playing in two competitions at the same time. You mentioned Luka Jovic. You mentioned Ante Rebic. Was the third strang of that trident is Sebastian Haller. Those three players, I think, have scored 32 out of Frankfurt's 40 goals this season, or something like
that. That's massive.
How important are those three, and can Frankfurt keep all of them?
I think they can keep all of them. Yeah, they definitely will not sell all of the three.
What if Frankfurt got offered 80 million euros for Luka Jovic in summer, which is not impossible?
Who said there's? Well,
my sources say that.
Really, 80 million from whom?
Premier League. I've got to protect my sources.
Premier League, really? Okay, interesting. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely, and I think Basti will agree, he's definitely the most talented of the three.
Well, Luka Jovic.
Yes, of course. He's the most completed striker in our squad.
Exactly. He's still lacking.
But he's not the most important for us, I have to say. No. Haller is, for our style of play, the most important striker. You saw it in Donetsk. So he was missing. We saw it in Nürnberg. We were playing 1-1. So Sebastian Haller is the most important for us. So if I have to let two go from the three, I have to let Jovic and Rebic go in summer. We have to accept that a minimum of one is leaving in summer.
Probably.
But probably it's more. It's more like. Was ist denn wahrscheinlicher? It's
more. Probably.
It's more likely to that two of the three. We call it Straßenbande 489 in Frankfurt. It's leaving. So, and I would, if I had to make a choosing, I would choose Haller to stay, and then you can look for another small, very, very powerful striker on the side of him. So, but the thing is, my stomach says only Rebic is leaving and so on.
And the interesting thing is actually that our former coach Niko Kovac had all of the three already in his squad, but actually just Adi Hütter managed to keep all of the three happy, to keep all of them in the squad.
He tries to manage it.
He's also playing a much more attacking style of football than Niko Kovac did.
Definitely. But if you look at the formation right now, Rebic is playing more or less as a number 10, which is not his favorite position, and you see it in every
and
match.
That's the biggest problem with the three of up front. It went well against Schalke, but only on the first side. If you look back, as he said, Rebic isn't a playmaker. He's not a kind of a Hazard guy. He's like, you need space on the wing.
It's
and
more wing.
Yeah. And if you have the three of them, maybe it's not that bad if we have to go sell one of them in summer and focus on two of them and get a real number 10 behind them.
And the good thing is actually, if the three play, you see that the defense of the opponent, they're kind of irritated. They don't know what to do. Who can they or who should they control most? Because there's always space for one and they combine very nicely
and
together.
That's the main reason why Adi Hütter is playing the three of them.
Yeah.
I guess because he sees for the static of our system, it's not that good. But as he said, just to irritate the opponent, the three of them, they're just kind of good because every one of them can score at any time of the game.
The opponent today is Borussia Mönchengladbach. They're coming off the back of a pretty disastrous 3-0 defeat away at home to Hertha Berlin last week. As for Frankfurt, I think three draws in a row, 2-2 at Bremen, 1-1 against Dortmund and 0-0 away at Red Bull.
Yeah.
How do you see today going? Are you going to get a win finally?
We're so nervous and we need to win. We need to win, actually. I mean, it's an opponent very difficult to predict, and the good thing is actually that they lost and that heavily, that big. That's good, and it's probably a good sign.
Are you not worried that they've had 7 days to recover from that?
Of course,
whereas,
I am. Yeah,
whereas you've all been to Ukraine in the week.
I was just saying that, and that's actually they ended. They're basically if you look at the squad, and you probably 15 players are better than ours, maybe 10. But there are a lot of players which actually have more experience than ours have, and they're not having that double burden, as you said.
Yeah. So, prediction?
I would go with another draw.
What does your stomach say and what does your head say?
I would go with another draw.
Another draw?
Yeah, perfectly fine with it.
I think it's going to be tight, but we will 1-0.
Okay, well, lads, thank you very much for your time, and fingers crossed for next Thursday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was Matt Ford in Frankfurt. He is in the studio now again with me and Jonathan Harding. Now, Matt, it was a 1-1 draw against Gladbach. But as you said, considering the fact that they were just in Ukraine, that's a pretty impressive result.
It was. It could have backfired early on. In the first 20-25 minutes, there were several really good chances for Gladbach. They were quite profligate, I thought. They found so much space. I mean, partly was self-inflicted because Frankfurt had either Danny Da Costa on the right or Filip Kostic on the left, operating as fullbacks slash wingers and pushing so far up, which left so much space for Thorgan Hazard in behind. But they wasted so many chances, the main one being Denis Zakaria, who found himself one-on-one.
It's a good save, though, I thought.
It was a really good save. And Kevin Trapp, I mean, I was going to get onto Kevin Trapp later, it does help when you've got a goalkeeper of that calibre in behind. Yeah, he makes himself big, and that's fine, but I don't think there's many excuses there. I think Zakaria's got to be putting Gladbach ahead. So Frankfurt were actually quite fortunate to still be level, and then even more fortunate that the ball falls to Da Costa. If we're going to be kind, we can say that's a fantastic first touch control and shot. But I think it has fallen to him, and he smashed it home, and it gave Frankfurt a fairly flattering lead at half time. But then in the second half, given the circumstances surrounding Frankfurt, first of all, they've been in Ukraine on the Thursday. Secondly, obviously, a few players have been rested, mainly Luka Jovic had been rested. Also, they've been known under Hütter for this attacking trident up front and playing such a fantastic attacking football. But the way they managed the game for most of the second half, I thought was really, really impressive. We saw yet another side to Eintracht Frankfurt, and yet another side to what Adi Hütter can bring to this team. And yeah, for large periods, Gladbach didn't necessarily look like getting back into the game. They had a lot of possession, but never really felt that they were really threatening Kevin Trapp's goal until, Tobias Strobel was brought on in for the final quarter of an hour, and it's his. If you look back at the replay of it, that vertical pass straight into the edge of the 18-yard box completely splits the Frankfurt defence, and Zakaria finishes it off really, really well. So, yeah, ultimately...
Jonathan de Guzman had a good game, I think, up until that point, and then it was that one little mistake of not knowing that Zakaria was behind him. That kind of... And I mean, Makoto Hasebe, I think, was on the broadcast, was blamed for not coming over, but he was marking Alassane Play, which I think is the guy he should have been marking.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Gladbach, like I said, had quite a lot of possession. They had been dragging Frankfurt around, so maybe it was to be expected that eventually a gap would appear.
And they might have even won it.
Yeah, Dermich at the end as well. They had a chance to finish it off, didn't they?
I was talking to one of our colleagues at work about this, who's also a Gladbach fan, and they said that they couldn't believe that Dermich was the guy brought on because he hasn't played in so long. I think it was his first appearance of the season, in fact. He's short of confidence. And if anyone in that situation, you'd want almost any other player to be on the end of that cross, because it's a great cross, especially for the 92nd minute for Oscar Wendt to put that ball in. and he just completely gets it wrong. If he gets that on target, I think it's a goal.
Yeah.
And I think there would definitely be a bit of a smash and grab from Gladbach if they had done that. But
yeah, but looking, whether late on or early on, definitely a case of missed chances for Gladbach.
Absolutely.
And,
well, exactly, because Gladbach, they did seem like they were trying to. They knew that Frankfurt was coming off of a trip from Ukraine, and you could see that in the opening minutes, I think, of both halves, where they were really pressing high. You saw Christoph Kramer coming forward a lot. You saw Dennis Zakaria coming forward to press a lot. They were really trying to take advantage of the fact that, yeah, that Frankfurt had played in midweek.
But there's an argument to be made that this is still a good point for Gladbach, because really, how many teams in the Bundesliga have felt uncomfortable playing Frankfurt?
That's true.
Don't deal well with them. And ultimately, it keeps Gladbach in check or ahead in third comfortably, and it stops Frankfurt pulling away in a chasing pack now that I think is really crazy. If I remember correctly, from up the table, I think it's from Hoffenheim or from Hertha, it's something like 31, 32, 33, yep. 34, 35, 36, which is really crazy because it's literally just 1 point each.
Yeah, so from some, right, like you said, from Bremen up to Leverkusen.
From Bremen up to Leverkusen, yeah. It's unbelievable, and I think that result, you can also argue, even if it was a little bit flattering for Gladbach based on the whole game, it's probably a good point for them.
I don't think it's a bad point for Frankfurt, but for Gladbach, but you just have to bear in mind that they weren't playing against a typical Frankfurt.
No, that's true.
They were playing against a Frankfurt, which the words that Adi Hütte used afterwards, they were using a hedgehog tactic, yeah. Basically just curling up, spikes out, keep you at bay, conserve energy, because you know they knew what exertions they'd had in the week, so it wasn't a typical Frankfurt, and that's why I think from a Gladbach point of view, you had to be thinking, especially because you had 7 days to recover from
that's
their own.
True.
Defeat against Hertha, this was the big game to come out and prove against a slightly wounded top six opponent that, you know, we can really, really bounce back here. And due to missing chances, they didn't. Adi Hütte certainly seemed the more satisfied with the point. He emphasised that after every Europa League away game this year, they haven't lost in the Bundesliga on the weekend after, and now they've got a 1-1 draw against the third, well, technically the third best team in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and as you wrote about, Matt, I mean, this is what the Germans call a Doppelbelastung, playing on multiple fronts. And most of the teams that play on multiple fronts, we've talked about this many times, they don't succeed. And yet this year, Eintracht Frankfurt has really bucked the trend. And that's, I think that is incredibly impressive. Now, the question is,
Watch them lose the second leg.
Yeah, and the question is, if they lose the second leg, also that. But also, considering the fact that they have so many players that are attractive to other clubs, if they get rid of some of their players again, are they going to be able to sustain this? Because as Jonathan has said many times in the past, you don't necessarily need teams that are can survive on both fronts, but can do so consistently create that second chasing pack in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, definitely the big question. It's the question where most Bundesliga teams then fall down. They have to expect that if they do hold their own in a European season, that obviously the attention is going to be on them. They're going to lose some of their main players. And I think there's an acceptance in Frankfurt that at least one of Haller, Rebic or Jovic is going to go. Probably Jovic. I thought it was interesting talking to Bastian Julian before the game. They were saying that despite Luka Jovic's goal-scoring form, they think that the bigger loss would actually be Sebastian Haller.
Agreed.
Were he to go. I think there's an acceptance that Luka Jovic could be gone. And then, the task falls to the sporting director and the hierarchy at Eintracht Frankfurt to get their transfer dealings right. And it's, if you look elsewhere, it's something that we've seen Cologne not get right.
Schalke.
It's something that we've seen Schalke definitely not get right. And then the question will fall to Eintracht Frankfurt.
So far, he's done a good job.
So far, they're doing a good job. But we've said this last season about Cologne. We've said it in the past about Schalke. And then the question will come that can Frankfurt continue to work and economise and work in the transfer market sensibly and with a realistic vision? I wish them all the best with that.
Yeah. Jonathan, you obviously were half joking when you said that they could lose the second leg and undermine all of this argument.
Yes.
But you also said that Frankfurt may be the best, may go the farthest in Europe this season.
I agree. Yeah, well, I mean, that's absolutely, I agree because I wrote it. I do think they can. I think, you know, Shakhtar, Matt said it earlier, they are a Champions League team, as far as I'm concerned. And there are arguments to be made that it is unfair for a side that won every single game of their group to end up having to play a side from a superior competition. And I think the gaps between the two are becoming more and more evident in modern football, especially with the amount of money going around. I do think that Shakhtar is operating on a different level to Eintracht Frankfurt. And I think eventually sides that finish third in the Champions League that end up playing Europa League group stage winners, the gaps are only going to get bigger because I think the Champions League money is obscene. So it's a challenge. And as much as you come away from a 2-2 result away, on the one hand thinking two away goals, fantastic, there is obviously, as Matt said, an argument to be made that you played most of the game against 10 men and you didn't really look that good against 10 men. I mean, I watched that game and Frankfurt were not that inspiring. They did play similarly the way that they played against Gladbach, with this sort of let's conserve and let's try and absorb, and here we are in defensive midfield and we have other capabilities as well. But I felt that was the wrong tactic to play against a side with the man.
Yeah, but that's precisely the dilemma that Adi Hütte has week in, week out at the moment. Yeah. And it's only going to continue the further they go in the Europa League. They're obviously well aware of the cost of the exertions in Europe and the limitations of the squad, and they're obviously reacting to that, and it's working for them just about so far. I wouldn't be surprised if they get past Shakhtar. That wouldn't be a massive surprise. But I mean, ultimately, yeah, I think you're right to point out that given the challenges that Schalke, Dortmund and Bayern face in the Champions League, technically Frankfurt maybe are the most likely German team to win a European competition, but I don't think they will.
I don't know. I think you can argue it both ways.
They've only got to draw Chelsea, Arsenal, yeah, Sevilla or a team like that.
But I also think those sides are fallible. I don't think it's been a year where those... I mean, they do operate on another level, absolutely, but... I heard somebody mention the other day, after Leverkusen won and they've now got the best record in the Bundesliga in the last five games, that they also have a chance of winning the Europa League. Now, I'm less convinced about that argument because Leverkusen play, 0-0-10 formations under Peter Bosch, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think eventually a superior opponent will find you out. So Leverkusen's lack of balance does concern me. I don't think Frankfurt have that problem. I think there are maybe one or two teams that are a little bit too much for them in the Europa League. I think they could give Arsenal a good go. I think Arsenal have definitely got their weaknesses that can be exploited. I think Chelsea have as well. My concern lies perhaps in sides like Napoli or Sevilla, who are very, very, very good at cup competitions, who understand what it is to consistently win over two legs. That's where my concern would lie when it comes to Frankfurt. But there is something unpredictable about this team. They have a good goalkeeper, as you mentioned. They have a solid defensive unit with no major names. Their defensive midfield is underrated. And they have three of the most dangerous players going forward in Europe. So if they get lucky with the draw, they can certainly get to a stage where people think, wow, Frankfurt in the quarterfinals or the semifinals. And then, as we've all seen over the years in sport, there's no reason why something incredible can't happen. If you get to that stage, you give yourself a chance. And I think of all the German teams, I think they have the absolutely best opportunity to give themselves a chance. And obviously everything rides on the second leg. But
they're going to be held back here by a bigger issue, which is this extra round in the Europa League. I mean, yeah. I think if it was like the Champions League...
But you could get a good draw.
They could, and there's a reason why not. I'm still convinced that the best way back into Europe next year is via the Bundesliga, by coming fifth or sixth.
Oh,
I think that's well within reach, especially because I think I put in the piece as well, the next five games include Hannover, Nuremberg, Dusseldorf, Schalke, Stuttgart, I think, as well as Hoffenheim. That's probably not as easy on paper. So, yeah, they've had a lot of draws recently, but quite credible draws, I think, against Bremen, against RB, against Dortmund.
And Gladbach now.
And now's the time, in the next couple of weeks, whether they stay in Europe or not, to really pick up points in the Bundesliga again.
But there's an interesting theory to have a look at whether they do, because if they don't, are the sides that don't have that European competition going to get in? So is it Bremen and Hoffenheim that slip in?
And Gladbach that keep going.
Well, yeah. Gladbach, I'm pretty confident, are going to finish in the top four. We already see how well Leipzig have played in the last few months after what we thought would be a terrible season. So it seems like there is a trend, as we were saying, this continuation of the trend of sides that don't play in Europe do well in the league. And the question is, if Frankfurt do keep going in Europe,
it could yet chip them up, couldn't
can,
it?
Yeah. Can they keep it up in the league? Because that's going to be the question.
All right, let's go to the top of the table, because Bayern Munich are just 2 points behind Borussia Dortmund. Oh wait, there's a Monday night game tonight, isn't there? So that could all change.
It could.
So we're obviously not going to address the game tonight, but Bayern Munich edged
out.
Should
we assume that Dortmund win, or is that dangerous?
Yeah. I think that's dangerous, yeah.
Well, we haven't seen it, so no spoilies. So Bayern Munich came up with a 3-2 comeback victory against Augsburg. Kingsley Coman had maybe his best game of the season.
The Ajax game was pretty amazing from him as well.
Also amazing.
But it was definitely up there.
But essentially carried a lot of the load, yes, for a Bayern Munich team that needed, yes, to get 3 points away at Augsburg. And yeah, then after appearing to injure his ankle at the end of the game, he might not be ready for the Liverpool game. Let's start with the game on Friday first. What did we think of that performance? Because conceding after in the first 13 seconds of the game is never good. Conceding another to Jidong Won, who hasn't been relevant in the Bundesliga in maybe 3 years, is also not good. but this is a game away from Augsburg that maybe it could have been a trap game.
I mean, Matt and I talked about this. The manner of the goals is the most concerning thing. You get the win, fine, and we all know that Bayern haven't been operating at the same level as they have in previous seasons. So I don't think it's a surprise that they weren't amazing in this game. The concern is the way they conceded the goals. And I actually read something quite interesting that I can't remember his name. Abel, I think his name is, Hungarian expert on the Bundesliga. He pointed it out, and he said, I wonder whether this is a tactical approach by Manuel Baum. And it turns out it was. Manuel Baum recognized that from kickoff, Joshua Kimmich pushes up. That opening goal is tactically planned by Augsburg. Okay, they didn't plan for it to go in off Goretzka's earlobe, but the point is they planned to put the ball in that area. And that is, you know, next level thinking. But if I'm Jurgen Klopp, I'm looking at that very, very keenly, because Joshua Kimmich on a number of attacks, I mean, we talked about this again, Matt, a number of times this season, even in Russia, when I was there watching him play for Germany, he just doesn't stay in that position when he needs to. And he doesn't even have an awareness of it, it seems. You know, Bayern Munich put out this fact that he's got the most assists now with Lionel Messi, 10,
yeah,
you know, great. Let's look at the positives. Yeah,
that's great, but who's behind you?
Yeah, exactly. And I'd love to know the statistic of how many times Joshua Kimmich has invited an opposition winger to start an attack or to generate an assist, because Philipp Max absolutely destroys him in the first 10 seconds and it leads to a goal. So tactically, there was a certain element of naivety, I think, in that performance, which is the worst thing you can do ahead of probably the biggest European game that Bayern have played, it feels like, in a while. And yes, they get the win. Yes, Kingsley Coman saves the day, and there's a whole narrative to be said about how Coman is quite, you know, officially now their number one winger, and Robin and Ribery are basically the backups. Like, I feel like there's been a shift, even though Robin's been injured. I think there's a clear shift now.
Mm-hmm. Frank Ribery will also not be there in Liverpool.
My concern is the defensive side of things. It's been coming in a few games, but Kimmich as a wing back is problematic. Alaba has been vastly improved over the last few weeks. I will give him that, but yeah, it's just
but
an
that,
issue.
That right side, not the
positioning.
Just
yeah, no,
not
the right
Kimmich,
centre back
but
as well.
Also Süle, who normally plays on that right.
And Hummels has been errant as well. Look at the Hertha game. He's passing. His sense. He does have. Hummels plays a brilliant ball through the lines. You know, you're just talking about that pass from Strobel. Hummels does that brilliantly, especially through the midfield. But he's also capable of inviting the opposition in situations. He's also very slow for a centre-back, which, you know, is problematic. I can speak from first hand. It's problematic when you're really slow, whatever level you play at. And I think that's my concern from the performance.
Yeah, we talked about this a few times, Matt, that it seems like even in that Leipzig game a few weeks ago, I mean, Timo Werner was going out wide to take advantage of that space in behind Joshua Kimmich. So if you're Niko Kovac and you're facing maybe, we've mentioned the front three from Frankfurt before, but also Liverpool has one of the best front three in Europe. That's if you're Niko Kovac, that's something that you have to address, don't you?
It is, and I think it is something he's aware of. There's a
quite in-depth interview with Niko Kovac in Kicker this week, and he's talking quite explicitly about the need to, yeah, we need to go forward and attack Liverpool and try and get an away goal at Anfield. But the absolute key is that when we are attacking, that we have to make sure that our defensive midfield and back four are structured in such a way so that if we do lose the ball, we're not vulnerable to the counter-attacks, which if they're being exposed by Schalke, by Dusseldorf and by Augsburg, then they're definitely going to be exposed by Liverpool. So it is definitely something they're aware of, definitely something that Kovac will be wanting to address, because John's right to point out it wasn't just the first goal to 17 seconds. The second goal when Augsburg went 2-1 ahead also came from pretty much the exact same pattern. And Joshua Kimmich getting drawn, almost like there's a magnet on the opposite on the opposite corner flag at the other end, which is dragging him out and wide, leaving so much space in behind him. That would be so dangerous. So that's the issue which they need to deal with on the flanks. And I think, yeah, as much as Alaba has been vastly improved this season, I think even there there's weakness, because it wasn't just Philip Max down the left which was getting a lot of joy. Jonathan Schmidt at left back was also getting joy in behind David Alaba at times. So that's an issue on both flanks for Bayern, which they definitely need to watch out for. And then John touched on the central defence before as well. There's a decision there to make for Niko Kovac. The sort of balls that Joan Boateng is capable of playing, that we see him playing, are going to be absolutely key. Where Kovac is talking about the idea that the best way to overcome Liverpool's high pressing is not to be like cautiously or even scared passing it around horizontally or even backwards at the back where you're going to get caught out, but to have the courage to play vertically straight
out, isn't
but Boateng also didn't make the trip, which is also
he also made the trip, there you go. That's that out then.
So what
which
I'm
means it's Hummels and Niklas Süle.
So I'm wondering if but we talked about this a little bit last week too. Bayern Munich haven't really played with a real six in front of the back four much in 2019.
Yeah, it's because Javi Martinez is the problem with Javi Martinez is he's not, he doesn't function as well in this team as he has in previous Bayern teams. I think he's too slow,
right?
And he's there to break up the play in a way that I don't think this team needs that position to do. They seem better suited when they have deep lying playmakers like Thiago or even Goretzka, and then have Hammers in the 10. I prefer Goretzka in the 10 based on previous performances, but they have so much quality to choose from, they can basically pick and choose.
But yeah, but they don't have that quality in the number 6 position.
They don't. Well, if you play Thiago there and you play Goretzka there, then that's fine. The question is whether Goretzka has the discipline to perform the role in the way that you need to. You obviously, so far, it doesn't look like Martinez works in that position anymore, because he doesn't provide the mobility and the speed that you need. You know, when you think about that position, how over the years that role has evolved. I mean, look at some of the top teams. We talked about it with Manchester United. Nemanja Matic doesn't work there anymore because he's not mobile enough. You know, it's very hard to have a holding midfielder who doesn't run.
Well, even you look back to when Philipp Lahm was playing.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you need someone who's smart. Javi Martinez is definitely game smart, but it's the ability to be mobile and to be agile in that position. And it's such a coveted trait at the moment. And it's so hard to come by. You know, when you think of central midfielders who can really provide that from box to box, you know, Ilkay Gundogan is still one of the best in the game at doing that because he's still very mobile. Okay, he's not as mobile as he was before his injury. But you need someone who's able to control the play, be a deep-lying playmaker, but also function as that tackling sort of clear up player in front of the defense. I mean, it's obviously going to be Hummels and Süle. Lucas Mai is on the plane as well, right? So he's going to be the backup sub on the bench.
Yeah, right? I don't think he's going to be a factor unless there's an emergency.
But you know, there's another situation where Bayern obviously have a reasonably talented centre back who deserves the opportunity to play somewhere. If he was playing at any other team, he'd be getting first team minutes. And then it comes down to how they want to set up. You know, Matt's absolutely spot on. They have to be brave in this game. They have to play vertical passes, because we've seen it time and time again. Teams that play nervously or patiently against Liverpool get absolutely slaughtered, because especially in the first 20 minutes, the first 20, 25 minutes are key.
It's gonna be absolutely key.
In games, I mean, look at the way that Liverpool took apart Manchester City in the Champions League last season because of the way they played in the first 25 minutes. They just don't let the opponents breathe. And, you know, this is going to be at Anfield. So you're going to have, Liverpool fans have rediscovered their voice since Jurgen Klopp arrived, so you're going to have an atmosphere that's intimidating. And if Bayern Munich are not mentally prepared for that, and quite frankly, there's enough evidence from Augsburg, this performance in Augsburg, that suggests that they're not, then this tie, much like the Dortmund game, is going to be over in half an hour.
I think John's right, so the first 20 minutes are going to be absolutely key, but I still think over the course of the 90, I think it's important that Bayern focus on their own strengths. And as much as there has been a lot to complain about with Bayern Munich this season, a few strengths not just come, and we mentioned before, a few strengths have come to the fore. Mm-hmm. Goretzka's obviously been really impressive. Yeah. Arguably their alongside Lewandowski and Coman, their most important player this season. So that's why I think it'd actually be a mistake to drop him back into a number six role, as much as it could make sense into if you are worried about extra protection for Hummels and Zula, if you are worried about the damage Liverpool can do on the break, maybe you want an extra six there. But I think it's more important. I'd like to see Kovac be courageous, be a bit more brave, push Goretzka forward where we can influence the game, especially if that means that it gives Kimmich a little less reason to go bombing forward, because you have James and Goretzka going for in more advanced roles. I think that's important.
Do you think James will play? I thought he had such a bad game against Augsburg. I think he's going to drop him.
It's either James or Thiago, isn't it?
I think it depends on who's fit at this point. I mean,
I think it's more likely to be Thiago though, because I just think James wasn't
also
there.
He also offers slightly more defensively, yeah, but I think not just there though.
I mean, you have Kingsley Coman, who
I think very back and forth about it. They've not said definitively that he's fit, right? They've said he's an option, which means I think he's going to be a game time decision.
Yeah.
Which means they're going to wait until the absolutely last minute. They have 36 hours or whatever it is when I first read this morning. So they've got all of today and all of tomorrow until the evening to make a decision. I think if he's anywhere above 70%, I think he just plays because he's too good and he's too dangerous. If he doesn't, I'd love to know what Ian Robin's fitness is. I don't think he might come on and have 20, 30 minutes. I don't know where he's at, but I think he's on the right road to recovery.
So is Thomas Müller on the out wide?
Thomas Müller is
not an option for you.
Well, he's suspended.
Oh, that's true. I totally forgot about that as well.
He's with the squad, but he's there sort of providing, you know, emotional support.
God, the group stage was so long ago.
Yeah, right. But he's suspended. So when you talk about depth with Ribéry out, Müller out, Robin may be questionable. I don't know about his fitness because he's not played in a while. He's recovering. Coman is questionable. Gnabry is almost certainly going to start. Right, I can't see that not being the case.
They don't have anybody else to start.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how they manage. I do think there's an opportunity for Bayern, if they get it right tactically, to inflict their own damage in the first 20 minutes. I mean, if Coman is ready and Gnabry's ready and Lewandowski's up for it, those front three can do just as much.
Virgil van Dijk's out, isn't he, as well? So I do wonder if that's an opportunity to get those balls into Lewandowski where he can cause some damage, because despite the apparent criticism of Lewandowski, he has been almost as dangerous as he has been.
He still scores.
Yeah, he's still scoring tons of goals. Despite whatever personal issues might be going on between him and various teammates or the coach on the pitch, he's just as dangerous as ever. And I think
he's so strong.
I just want to see Bayern and Kovac being brave and playing to their own strengths, because it's very easy to go to Anfield and be cowed into playing too nervously and too conservatively and too reactively and reacting to what Liverpool can do. What Liverpool can do to you, Liverpool will do at home. I think there will be some occasions, and Kovac admitted this, that you can't eliminate the danger. So play to your strengths and go get an away goal.
How much do we think Jurgen Klopp is going to play a factor into this game?
I don't think he plays that much of a factor. I don't think there are a number...
I don't think his experience playing against Bayern Munich, beating them in the cup a couple times,
It plays a factor in him understanding the team. But I don't think it plays a factor in affecting Bayern Munich's, you know, mental preparation or the number of players. I mean, obviously Lewandowski's got experience with him, and there are players in this team that are very familiar with how he's coached teams. I think it gives Liverpool Liverpool a certain sense of understanding that other coaches wouldn't have. It's only natural. Jürgen Klopp comes from the Bundesliga. He knows German football. He's played against Bayern oodles of times. Of course he knows. But he's also played against Bayern Munich sides that are not this side. You know, every team in a club is not always a representation of the club. Bayern Munich now are not the Bayern Munich that they were 5-10 years ago. They were not the Bayern Munich that played the Champions League final against Jurgen Klopp. And I think, as much as he understands the Bayern psyche and the mental trait, I would back most top European coaches to understand the Bayern Munich mentality. I wouldn't say that Jurgen Klopp has anything necessarily too much of an edge. Maybe he does. Obviously, he's a qualified coach and knows a lot more than we do. But I think he has a good understanding, maybe a little bit more than most because of his experience in the German league. But I don't think it's going to be decisive. One thing I do think that could be decisive that we haven't talked about at all yet is Manuel Neuer. And I think, you know, he played against Augsburg and you can't necessarily blame him for the two goals because really they're free hits. But he's been out for more of the last 2 years than any player in any position should be. Sven Ulreich is not an amazing backup, but I think he deserved to have his chance earlier on in the season based on Neuer being in bad form. You know, nobody wants to talk about that because they just want to talk about how he revolutionized the position a few years ago. And that doesn't change. He absolutely did. But just because he's your number one doesn't mean he's above criticism or he's above bad form.
I wouldn't
form.
Say he's above criticism. I would still wouldn't have dropped him, though.
No, but if I mean, you if don't he, if think about the precedent that you set with that. And if you say Manuel Neuer can have 5 bad games, but if he it doesn't matter because we're not going to drop him. Now, you can go both ways. You can say, yeah, we're going to protect him because we want him to have the confidence.
Well, he was out
but if you don't drop him, then you're effectively saying, you know what, Manuel, you can do whatever you like, mate. You can play as bad or as good as you can, and you just know that you're never going to lose a number one spot.
I don't think it's about that, though. I think it's more about...
Yeah, but whether it is or it isn't, that subconsciously comes into the psyche of any player because you know whatever you do, however hard you push yourself, you're always going to be in the sticks on Saturday.
Yeah, but Sven Ulreich has always accepted a role behind Manuel
This isn't
Neuer.
About Sven Ulreich. This is about the message that communicates to the squad. If you say... You're
yeah,
the
but
best.
The goalkeeper is so unique as a position. You play the same goalkeeper.
I don't think it matters.
Especially when it comes to the Bundesliga, where you don't have that as many games as other countries.
I don't think it matters. I think if you don't play well over a consistent amount of time, there has to be a conversation about it. And I think Manuel Neuer played poorly for a number of games to the point where you can say, yeah, okay, he was injured and he's coming back from that, but maybe his injury is playing a role. He's just got re-injured. Now, there's a factor there that makes me think about how big this game is. You know, we saw Sven Ulreich single-handedly or not cost Bayern Munich in the Champions League in previous seasons where he made that mistake against Real Madrid. I think Manuel Neuer is going to play a big role in this game. Maybe he's going to have a fantastic game. Maybe he's going to be brilliant. Maybe he's going to deny Liverpool's front three. It is a possibility. He is a brilliant goalkeeper. But there is also the possibility that I don't think enough people are talking about that Manuel Neuer, as a goalkeeper, because it's a unique position, is out of form. He's out of confidence. As a goalkeeper, Manuel Neuer was at his absolute best when he was playing week in, week out, making saves, looking fantastic, being involved, being like an extra defender. He hasn't been in that role for a really long time. I think it's very difficult for a goalkeeper to be involved in the game and to get that confidence. This is a huge game. This is the season for many players in this Bayern team. And I think it's going to be a factor.
Matt, do you agree?
I do. It's a hand injury, isn't it, at the moment, with a thumb,
isn't it?
Manuel Neuer. He was doing his interviews after the Augsburg game wearing some sort of thumb hand protector.
Right.
He insisted that he hadn't had that on during the game, which, okay, I believe him. But there was one moment which people have been highlighting where he opted to catch a ball with his almost like catch it with his elbows into his chest rather than going through it straight with his hands. So whether there is any sort of subconscious doubts going around in his head regarding his injury, regarding his thumb, who knows? And I think, yeah, if I was Jurgen Klopp, it was something I'd be making Liverpool players aware of. You know, take shots, test him.
Yeah.
Is this something? I mean, is 80% of Manuel Neuer at this point in his career? Is that enough cause to start Sven Ulreich over him in a game against Liverpool?
Not necessarily. I wonder what psychological effect the issues last season in the Champions League had on Sven Ulreich. So I wouldn't go as far to say that Neuer shouldn't start. I would still start him, but it's definitely something for Liverpool to be aware of and to try and test out.
All right, one programming note before we continue our discussion. The guys and I are going to be headed to Freiburg this weekend to catch their game against Augsburg, doing our pilgrimage to the Schwarzwaldstadion before the new stadium opens. So if any of you plan on attending that game, if any of you are in the Freiburg area, we'd definitely love to meet up with you. We get so many listens. We appreciate you guys tuning in every week, so we'd like to meet some of you in person. And along that, and on that note, we should also note that most of the podcast next week is going to be very Freiburg-centric. So if you're looking for a Bayern Munich discussion, a Dortmund discussion, a Schalke discussion, or even a Frankfurt discussion like today, we will be talking about something else next week. All right, so there is another Champions League game that
everyone's forgotten about.
A lot of people have forgotten about because it seems like it's already over. Although there's still two games to play. It's the Manchester City against Schalke tie. So I think the best way to address this tie is we can obviously bring in their 0-0 draw with Freiburg over the weekend that had two red cards.
What a humdinger that was.
But I think let's go around the couch and say what needs to happen in order for Schalke to come away with anything in this game.
Schalke needs to be defensively organized, needs to be combative, needs to be really, really well structured for over 180 minutes. And they need a pretty large portion of luck as well.
Define luck. What would need to so does it need to be like a deflected corner? Does it need to be something where it's lobbed over the goalkeeper?
They've only got a chance over the two legs if they avoid. I think if they can either avoid defeat or at worst lose 1-0. In the home leg, just in a position where they can go back to Manchester
and have a chance
of nicking an away goal of their own. I just find it really, really hard to imagine, and I don't even think it's the main issue for Schalke. If I was them, I would probably have written it off. Christian Heidel was at the City Chelsea game, I think, and he said that he came back from it and felt dizzy. that's the word you use. You said they make you dizzy watching them.
Well, that was also the game that they won 6-0. So yeah, I'd be pretty dizzy watching
Manchester City are several levels above Schalke. It's not how Schalke's season should be measured. We've discussed it before. Schalke have several issues which need sorting out this season, and how they perform against Manchester City in the Champions League is not one of them.
So structure and luck. What do you say?
It's hard to disagree. I mean,
Sully Sané from a set piece.
Yeah, they need something. I mean, set pieces is definitely an angle to take. You know, if you look at the way Schalke's biggest strength is arguably the way that they defend, because, you know, and that's not necessarily saying much, but they can absorb teams. When their defence is fully fit, you know, with Sané and Nastasic at the back, if Açıkpa and...
Stambouli?
No, Stambouli's out. If their back four, I'm struggling to remember the name of the right back.
Caligiuri.
Caligiuri, yeah.
Their greatest player.
Says a lot. If they can tuck in enough in those situations, then I think that they can deal with a lot of teams. The problem for Schalke is that they have absolutely nothing other than Weston McKennie going forward. I mean, Weston McKennie played right back on the weekend, which, you know, was also hilarious, because as much as I'm happy to see him playing in different positions in terms of him getting the game time, Domenico Tedesco just needs to make a decision about where he thinks he's best. And I think it's quite obvious that he's best as a box-to-box midfielder because he offers so much. So there is something there for Schalke. If they can absorb a team for 50, 60 minutes, they will have a couple of chances on the break. The problem is that they don't have any players that inspire any confidence on the break. They don't have any players that are really good in one-on-one situations. The best one they had, they sold to Manchester City. And Rabbi Montondo, that they just bought from Manchester City, is obviously way too young. We were talking about this the other day. He's too young to be thrown into the deep end in this situation.
Yeah.
He's got some talent. He can't be the guy that they go to. He's not Jadon Sancho yet. He's 6 months to a year away from being that kind of player. But at the moment, Schalke have very little
other
to offer.
Options, yeah.
You know, Konoplyanka, okay, but is very hit and miss. Burgstaller came back against Freiburg after, I think, since December he's made his comeback. But Burgstaller is the kind of, you know, cup striker that you play against lower league where you need someone to be gritty and elbow someone in the face on the way to scoring a header. You know, he's not the striker you need on the break. Mbolo has been injured for 1,000 years. So you've got so many problems. We've, you know, just touching on the personnel issues here, not even the structural ones or the recruitment ones, that if they do absorb a team for 60, 70 minutes, they don't look like a team that will take their chance when it comes on the break. So yes, set piece would be the way I would go. I'd say we've got to hold them off. They've got the goalkeeping issue as well, because he dropped Ralph Fairman, but Alexander Nubel's suspended, I think, still. Mm. So then you've got Fairman coming in, who is out of form, but he's their captain. So it's strange. Stambouli's injured. He has been the standing captain. So you've got so many question marks. And then you're playing Manchester City. It's not just any old team that you need to absorb against. I think Tedesco's got one hell of a challenge on his hands here. And if he gets it right, then we can absolutely give him the plaudits that he deserves. But okay, can they hold Manchester City at bay for an hour without conceding? I doubt it.
Yeah. Well, I think... the only way that this could possibly go in Schalke's way, or even for Schalke to even have a minuscule of a chance, is if there is a Freaky Friday situation where on the morning of the match, Pep Guardiola's brain wakes up in Tedesco's body, and Tedesco's brain wakes up in Pep Guardiola's body, and then they go into the game.
And suddenly... Schalke look like Manchester City.
Exactly. That's because, like you all guys said, much better than I ever could. I don't think they have a chance in this game.
If we're really realistic, right? We all agree that they don't have a chance. But let's think outside the box. How would you approach this game with the opportunity? Well, maybe not game, because I think the best way to look at it is the tie. Matt said is right. You've got to go to Manchester with something to play for. I mean, look at the positives of this team and try and play to those strengths. Amor Katoucu has been brilliant in attack. He is absolutely the striker that you can play on the break. I mean, that goal against Bayern Munich is something that you would see from someone 5 years older than him. Weston McKennie is the most box-to-box direct midfielder that you have. Brilliant. Let's use him. Let's see if we can get Ben Taleb a little bit more disciplined in defensive midfield so that he doesn't get sent off, but can also use the ball, drive the team forward, use McKennie's legs, get something going there. Now, there is a way that you can play to those strengths. And I think we saw some of it against Bayern Munich in that game where they lost 3-1 before they completely collapsed. If they can do that and get very lucky, and Ralph Fairman has a good day, there's a chance. But
do you think, Matt, there's any chance that Manchester City will go back into this, go into the second leg without having scored a goal?
No.
1-0 would be a victory for Schalke.
Yeah,
in some ways.
Even a 1-0 defeat wouldn't be absolutely disastrous, because if they have something to play for in the second leg, then it's all to play for at least. But no, I think John's right. They have to look at their strengths. They need City to have a bit of an off day. They need shots to go wide rather than on target. They need maybe City to hit the bar rather than go in. Just little things to go against them. And Schalke will get a chance throughout the game. At some point in the 90 minutes, they will get a chance.
Of course they're going to get a chance.
Whether from a corner or whether with Katoucu on the break, and they have to take it. That's the only way they'll get anything out of it. But as I said, I would be interested to have seen how Tedesco could approach this game had the transfer dealings been better.
Let's ask that question. If Schalke had the team that they had last season,
with Goretzka, Thilo Kehrer, with Max Meyer, I think
Thilo Kehrer would be the biggest addition to that team.
Okay,
I know that Leon Goretzka's playing really well, but I do think that we talked about this the other day with one of our friends and colleagues, Sophie Sabini, who's an excellent journalist. So we were talking about that with her, about how Thilo Kehrer has been so good at Paris Saint-Germain. And I think, you know, understated fact that he's casually slotted in and playing every week, you know, and Schalke could certainly do with someone of that quality.
Benjamin Stambouli is currently playing in Thilo
Kehrer's
position.
He's injured, but yeah, effectively he is. I mean, we talked about this as well, Matt. I think it's a great point. Tedesco's come under a lot of criticism, but I think Heidel, you know, he deserves some criticism as well, because the manner of the signings, it's more like Mainz than it is like Schalke.
Yeah, it's not just the players which they've let go, and half of that they couldn't help. They weren't going to turn down whatever it was, 30 or 40 mil or whatever PSG paid for Thilo Kehrer. Yeah, they're not going to turn that down. It's difficult to keep Goretzka and Schalke, and it was clear, quite obvious that he had no ties to the club and wanted to go to Bayern Munich. Yeah. Okay, and I thought the Max Meyer situation was completely mismanaged. So it's not just the players which they've failed to keep; it's also the players who've then been brought in. We've been through this before. Players such as Swart Serdar and Mark Uth. Are barely top four Bundesliga strikers, let alone Champions League level, who can do damage to Manchester City. Yeah, I think it would have been a completely different situation had the chance for
Omasco's
another one. If it had a chance for policy been slightly more professional and slightly more ambitious. This squad as of 2019 is now 100% Christian Heidel's squad at Schalke. The responsibility has to fall on him. They're getting worse week by week in the Bundesliga. The game against Freiburg was just the latest low point. As disciplined as Freiburg were, and I think Freiburg do an awful lot right, we discussed that quite a lot, there's absolutely no way that a team of Schalke's ambition should be being held to a 0-0 draw at home to Freiburg.
Agreed.
And you can't even say they've got an eye on the Man City game in the week, because, like I said, I don't think they do. I think they're all aware there's more important things to do. Yeah, anything can happen, but it would take an absolute miracle. And Manchester City have got extremely fortunate that they've on paper they've got this should be a bye. It really should.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about Schalke. That's a pretty damning appraisal of Schalke 04, isn't it?
So much potential, so much quality, and yet. So walk through for the opposition.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribini Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And if you get the chance, please leave us a friendly review. We appreciate the kind reviews you have already left for us. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is on Twitter at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_FinOpdorp. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.